Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your hosts on this weekend show, as well as your hosts on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. Well, this week, lots to talk about outside of some inflation data that we had, simply because a lot of eyes are still on the U.S. banking system after the Silicon Valley Bank collapse, as well as a couple other smaller banks that went down shortly after Silicon Valley Bank. And one thing that we have seen is a lot of people, it looks like, shifting money into some of the larger banks in the U.S. It's a much broader topic to discuss just how fractured the U.S. banking system is with all these small and medium-sized banks spread around. Something that, you know what, we will touch on this weekend show, but we're going to try to take a little step away from just talking about the Silicon Valley Bank collapse, because we covered it a lot this week in our daily editorials. We are kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at The Money Show. Now, Mike, look, let's start with the banking system and discuss the Fed's and the government's reaction to quickly shore up some cash to really make depositors whole at these banks. The markets, they were a bit shaky, but they didn't go through anywhere near the type of collapse that we have seen during other, I guess, banking failures. Before we get into some of the nuances here, Mike, what's your takeaway from the stability of the U.S. banking system and the collapse of a couple banks?
Yeah, you got to love talking on days like this where there's nothing going on, right? Nothing interesting and all of that. No, I'll tell you, what a roller coaster week or so it's been here, in all markets. I mean, obviously, we talked quite a bit going back, a year and a half, almost 2 years, about all the ridiculousness going on in the tech sector and all these garbage money-losing companies that were raising money in the IPO market, how it reminded me a lot of the dot-com bubble. And I had warned that this is going to blow up in our faces. You want to be completely avoiding that junk. And ultimately, you know, what happens in that sector is going to have broader economic implications in terms of hiring and firing decisions and parts of the stock market that are losing value and so on. But, you know, what we're seeing now is kind of the ongoing fallout from that trend. And I say that because look at the types of banks that have failed here. They are enormously tech-centric, crypto-centric. They're very tied to those kinds of bubble sectors of the market that had been doing very well back then and have been rolling over, you know, and on death's doorstep ever since. So, you know, just like in the mortgage crisis, it was those subprime lenders that were the first to blow up because obviously they were the most leveraged to house prices and mortgage activity. You're seeing the tech-focused banks, Silicon Valley and Signature and crypto-focused bank and so on, that are having the worst fallout here. So, you know, it's all tied to that big trend, even though sometimes at first blush, it doesn't seem that way. That being said, you know, I certainly wasn't out there naming, I think Bank X is going to fail or Bank Y is going to fail and it's going to happen in 48 hours. I mean, I'm somewhat surprised by the speed of this process because, again, one thing that's very different about this banking crisis that we're facing now is that the assets that are causing the problem aren't a bunch of junk securities. It's mostly mortgages and, you know, MBS and treasuries these banks own. It's the poor interest rate risk management that happened there. So it's not like last time where they owned a bunch of garbage bonds that as soon as house prices rolled over and people started defaulting, the junk underlying the bonds was bad. These are largely credit good bonds, but if you don't hedge your interest rate risk and you have Jay Powell on the warpath and hiking rates at a faster pace and by a greater magnitude than any time in four decades, you know, that's gonna cause chaos in sector or in banks that are overloaded with interest rate risk. And that's what we're seeing here. So, you know, that's what's causing this, the spillover. I mean, you can see it spilling over into the dollar, spilling over into precious metals, obviously equities with the, you know, the banking sector getting crushed here. It's very much underscoring I think that, or going back to the whole thing that with every Fed hiking cycle, going back decades, what always happens, right? Something blows up. And that's, a technical Wall Street term I'm using there, of course. I mean, something blows up, whether, and in this cycle, we're now seeing banks blow up, which means basically the market knows the Fed hiking cycle, if it's not already done, it's going to be done very soon. They're throwing out, several days ago, there was this blather about the Fed going 50 basis points the next meeting. I said that wasn't going to happen because some of the economic data, the labor data, the inflation data appears to be rolling over. I certainly didn't know a day or two later that you were going to have these rolling bank failures. But I think for economic reasons, the Fed cycle was already almost done. You add this credit crisis stuff on top of that, the Fed cycle is probably done. Maybe they squeeze out one more 25 bip move, but that's probably about it. And that's what you're seeing in the dollar, because it's not just the U.S. Fed that may get spooked by this, since Credit Suisse over in Europe is having issues. There's talk the ECB may have to short circuit its hiking cycle. And that's why you have this sort of weird dynamic where both the dollar and precious metals, the US dollar price of gold, are soaring.
Well, Mike, let's dig into that a little bit more because up until today, where the Credit Suisse information was released and they plunged by about 16% today, which got everybody even more spooked about the banking situation over in Europe, in addition to the United States, it was that the dollar was pulling back and rates were pulling back. And we saw the precious metals, kind of plowing higher, and people were putting a bid into bonds. People were buying bonds as more of a safe haven. Now we've seen that reverse where the dollar is also turning around and going up in tandem with the other two safe havens. And we also saw the yen pick up a little bit as a safe haven currency. So it does see that the markets are getting more defensive in nature because of this banking issue. And as you mentioned, it seems a lot of it is due to bad interest rate management within their balance sheets. And so because the long end of the yield curve was actually lower than the short end, it kind of screwed up their whole lending policy of, doing deposit products and CDs and things based on the short end of the yield curve and doing the loans and the mortgages based on the long end. Now that that got flipped on its head with an inverted yield curve, do you think that this is a delayed effect we're seeing from this Fed rate hiking cycle? As you mentioned, it may be getting near its end, but are there other banks that are potentially at risk with toxic assets on their balance sheets?
I think definitely this is kind of more of your traditional poor hedging, poor decision making, poor asset liability management, whatever kind of jargony term you want to use. It's just again, when you, I think the takeaway here for investors is that you can't have rates rise this fast, this furiously, without it causing casualties somewhere in the financial system. I mean, this was a move on par, again, with what we haven't seen since the early 1980s. You know that even well-managed banks are going to have issues with that. I mean, the FDIC, I forget what the exact number was, but there's hundreds of billions of dollars of unmarked losses on bank balance sheets because banks own a bunch of treasuries, they own a bunch of mortgage-backed securities that have long durations, which is simply a fancy way of saying, for every 1% increase in interest rates, you're going to lose X dollars or X percentage points on your bonds. Durations is a measure of interest rate risk. So with a lot of long duration assets on balance sheets, with interest rates rising so much, the value of those plunges. It's kind of, you can think of it in non-jargon terms as a homeowner, as mortgage rates do what they've done, which is more than double in the U.S. in the last year, year and a half. What happens? The amount that somebody can pay for your house plummets because they can't afford as much of a monthly payment. Or, the implied value of your house, I should say, because obviously until something sells, it doesn't lower that. But if, your house theoretically is worth $400,000, but because interest rates spike, somebody can only afford to pay $300,000 for your house. The same thing happens to bonds. When interest rates spike, the previously owned bonds lose value, just like a house loses value, just like other assets lose value. So that's what you have going on. You're finding out where the bodies are buried. And this is, this is, again, this is par for the course at the end or very close to the end of Fed hiking cycles. I mean, you go back to to 99, 2000, what happened at that towards the end of that cycle, the dot-com started crashing and then the NASDAQ crashed and that ended that Fed hiking cycle. You go back to the mortgage situation, in 2007 when Bernanke was talking about how they would plan to still raise rates. And then what happened? A couple weeks later, you saw the market start to fall apart. And I think it was 2 weeks after Bernanke said something like, we're going to keep hiking, that they started cutting because and started doing emergency measures because the market started blowing up due to the mortgage crisis. So this seems to be the end of the cycle. This seems to be this cycle's crisis. And what does that mean as an investor? Well, it means I've been talking about how I thought that the yield curve would flatten dramatically for the last 18 months. I just tweeted out the other day that if I had made money from that as a bond investor or a regular investor, I would reverse that, because what's probably going to happen now is the yield curve is going to re-steepen in a bullish fashion for bonds, meaning all yields are going to fall, but short-term yields are going to fall faster than long-term ones. That's a big switch in my bond market thinking. For things like precious metals, you get less Fed action priced in there. You get less ECB or other central bank action priced in. What happens? You relieve the interest rate governor that we've had on gold, on silver. So I would, you know, I've been very bullish those metals, and for a long time they just kind of sat there like a bump on a log. That's changing now. I don't think that will, you know, or I think that process will accelerate. So I absolutely want to be very long precious metals. And I think in the stock market, you know, as I've been more bullish and wrong for a week or so on bargain hunting in the stock market, but I think outside of the banking sector, you've already seen a lot of tech get annihilated in the last 18 months. Tech's been in a private bear market for a year and a half. You know, you're probably, and you are seeing some more downside here, but I would start to throw some, you know, throw some bids out there, do a little bottom fishing in that sector. I wouldn't touch banks for now. And I think you can still do okay in some of those dividend focused sectors that are going to benefit from a renewed decline in interest rates. So there are ways to play this that are not just from the short side. I mean, there are things you can buy into this panic that I think are ultimately going to work out pretty well for you. Again, because I think this is more like a private recession, whatever you want to call it, in the tech sector with some spillover. I do not think that even with what we're seeing in the last several days, that this is on par with the great financial crisis for the broad economy. You know, and that's kind of my view there.
I think that's a key point, though, Mike. Let's take a step back and understand that the Fed has hiked rates quite aggressively. They wanted inflation to come down. It hasn't come down as far as they wanted. They also wanted the economy to slow down a little bit. That has slowed down. But look, we haven't had that major collapse or contagion type impact that we've seen in the last few major bear markets. That brings up the question then, did the Fed kind of walk that tight line? And quite frankly, are the bottoms in, not just for the precious metals, but for markets broadly?
You know, I think absolutely the bottom was in months ago in precious metals. And I, you know, I would still, I think that the precious metal sector is probably one of the biggest opportunities that I see here. And it, you know, that's been my thinking for quite some time. And, you know, as we've talked in the past, you look at gold. I mean, if it takes out these kind of early 2023 levels, and especially, you know, can take out 2000, then there's a lot of upside there. I think that within the market, again, this is the time, I think, that in some of the sectors that already collapsed, that were already an issue, that, you know, already had their private bear market, things like tech, that's where there's a little bit of opportunity, where you want to be, you know, not going hog wild, but want to start throwing some bids out there and doing a little bottom fishing. You know, I don't think you got to let this banking sector stuff sort itself out for that sector. But in even dividend paying sectors, I mean, you know, all of those kinds of names where you have higher yield, it's important to remember that's where, you know, safety money flows. And that's also where you've seen the best returns in tough markets. There was a study I was just looking at earlier today that, you know, in down markets over the last 35 some odd years, dividend payers outperform non-payers by like 18 percentage points. That's a pretty big margin. And it tells you that the safety that you get from dividends and yield, especially in safer companies, is a great place to be when, you know, when the overall market has issues and some of these non-paying sectors get hammered.
All right, Mike, we'll wrap it up here. Look, we still need to see just what the fallout is going to be from these bank collapses and even what the Fed's going to do next week. But it does seem like we're closer to the end. In all fairness, we all thought that the rate hiking cycle would come to an end this year, and we were kind of waiting for a shoe to drop. A couple bank failures are that shoe to drop, but fact of the matter is the markets didn't just drop out of bed either. So it's a very interesting market, and clearly there's still money out there and investors are still fairly liquid, at least as we're seeing it today. We're recording this on Wednesday. Mike, thank you as always for your time. It's great chatting with you. We'll chat with you in a couple weeks. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Great. Thank you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.